You and I back together again, kicking off a brand new week on Monday, April 24th, 2023 on Connecticut Today. We talked extensively about President Biden's likely announcement of his 2024 reelection campaign. Landmark Legal Foundation attorney Mike O'Neill was back on the program to talk about the current abortion pill controversy involving the federal courts and the U.S. Supreme Court. So are we really going to do this? Honestly, are we that dumb as a nation, as a country? Are we really that rock stupid that we're going to do this with what, 300, 320, 330, 350 million people, the majority of which apparently don't want this? We're really going to go ahead and do this. Why? I don't get it. You wonder why people are angry on both sides of the aisle. What are you talking about, Paul? Well, it's pretty simple. Poll after poll after poll after poll coming out, and a new one that came out from NBC News over the past day or so found that majorities of people in this country on both sides of the aisle don't want Joe Biden and or Donald Trump to run again. Enough of those two. That's what the people in this country are saying. But again, I guess the knucklehead voters in the Democratic Party and the stunod voters in the Republican Party, when clear majorities of people say, no, give us new blood, give us fresh blood, give us fresh thinking, enough with the geriatrics. But again, the parties that be, those same people who will do all they can to maintain the status quo, are going to give us two old, tired, sputtering guys to run for president again. It's mind-numbing. It is mind-numbing when there are other voices. Not that you would agree, maybe if you're on the opposite side of the aisle of the other voices, not that you'd agree with them, but at least there are different voices out there. But I guess the entrenched old boys and old girls in the Republican Party and the entrenched old boys and old girls in the Democratic Party, they're afraid of new blood. They're afraid. Now, I kind of understand it from the Democratic Party side. Joe Biden is the last of the generation of moderate Democrats. There's a fear on the Democratic side that anybody behind Biden is going to tack too far to the left. And there's a fear on the Republican side that, you know, once and if Mr. Trump is defeated for a second term after holding out for 4 years after being defeated the first time in 2020, that his brand of in-your-face conservatism is going to be gone. Maybe it will be. Maybe that's the truth on both sides of the aisle. But apparently the American people are kind of sort of okay with that. Most Americans, says here in a new poll, do not want former President Trump to run for the White House, and the majority doesn't want President Biden to run for re-election either. That's according to this story in The Hill. Rumor is that Mr. Biden is going to attempt to tie his shoes, get up, put his jacket on, and shuffle out to the White House and declare for the White House again this week. Although that might not even be the case. I guess they're going to use a campaign video. New NBC News poll finding that 60% of Americans think Mr. Trump should not try and retake the Oval Office, including roughly one-third of Republicans. At the same time, 70% of Americans tell Joe Biden, no, not another term. They're not blind. They can see this. It's nothing personally against Mr. Biden. But this is insanity. This is lunacy. Have you heard the word salads this guy comes up with now on a regular basis? What? What did he say? And I don't want to say, well, you know, he's had a history of stuttering. Stop it. stop that line. He's clearly in decline, as millions of seniors are, as we all will be at one point or another, hopefully later than sooner, to enjoy later years with family and friends and kids and grandkids and great-grandkids and all that. But this is, do you understand what a screwed up time we're in? Do you get this? Do you understand this? We have clear majority. It's not 51 or 52%. It's 60% when it's asked about Mr. Trump and 70% when it's asked about Mr. Biden. Of the populace of the U.S. that say, no, thank you. Somebody new, please. And for some reason, the tired, old, lame powers in both parties are going to give us this matchup again. Really? Come on. Are we really going to do this? We can't. This is just ridiculous. Other countries must be laughing at us. Do you realize how the Russians and the Chinese must be high-fiving themselves over this? It is lunacy. The latest NBC results are in line with other polls indicating low enthusiasm for either Trump or Biden as they ready for what could be a 2020 rematch. Oh, my God. One guy's facing a criminal indictment. The other guy can hardly walk off a stage half the time. And I'm sorry if you think I'm being disrespectful. I'm not. I'm being a realist. The campaign is still, the election day is still 2 years away. What kind of sense does it make to elect an 82-year-old person to a 4-year term? Why in God's name would anybody want to do that? But apparently, at least 70% of people don't. But again, I guess we're going to do it. It is mind-boggling that in the United States of America, on April 24th, 2023, at roughly 2:15 Eastern Time, it is mind-boggling that we are sitting here looking at a rematch. Hopefully it doesn't happen. I don't care. I'm not wishing ill will on anybody, but somebody has to stand up on both sides of the aisle, on the Republican side and on the Democratic side, and saying, enough. No, no more geriatrics. You need a younger vision. You cannot go through another round of what is going to be. You think 2020 was bad. Wait till you see 2024 with the vindictiveness that's going to come up and the petty and partisan attacks that are going to come up. But, I mean, my God, we 4 years ago, we thought finally enough, and we're actually going to do this again. See, this is why people feel angry at politicians. They feel powerless. They feel disgusted on both sides of the aisle. It's not just on the Republican side, or it's not just on the Democratic side. But the funniest thing is, and I'll continue with this in a second. The funniest thing is, all of a sudden, now, I have made this issue one since late 2020, you know, when we were getting into the Trump v. Biden thing, and I said we need this once and no more. All of a sudden now, these mainstream news outlets, I'm talking the Wall Street Journal, the TV networks, even the New York Times, all of a sudden, over the past 3 or 4 days, I'm seeing this stuff at home and you know, in between watching baseball and hockey and the NBA playoffs, great sports weekend, just hanging out, chilling over the weekend. But I'm laughing constantly at all these panel discussions now and all these editorials coming out going, has anybody noticed that Mr. Biden is slowing down a bit? Oh, now that supposedly, and who knows, we might be in for a big surprise here come tomorrow, Tuesday. Maybe he's not running. I don't know. Wouldn't that be the cat's meow, huh? But all of a sudden now, something I've been mentioning for a year and a half, 2 years here, all of a sudden, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, ABC News, hey, have you noticed? Notice what? Biden's kind of old. Oh, well, yeah, shh, don't say anything. I got some excerpts coming up. Just, are we really going to do this? Seriously. We're really going to do this. So Americans are going to possibly elect one guy who at the time of his election would be 82 years old. What? And I know what you're going to say. Well, you know, my aunt, she's right with it. Aunt Irma there, she's 82. Your aunt is playing bingo. Okay? My grandfather, he's 83. He still mows his own lawn. That's great. Good for your grandfather. That is fabulous exercise. But I had to open with this today because am I the only person that thinks this is absolutely nuts? Who else in the world elects people? Who of what functioning nation in the world elects people when they're tickling 80? We have nobody else that can do this? On the Republican side? Or on the Democratic side? Or maybe all those people that I laughed at over the years who said, well, it's a grand conspiracy. There's no difference between a Democrat and a Republican. You know what? I'm starting to think maybe they were right. Maybe they're right. All right, a little bit of I think at least for a lot of people, a confusing story over the past 2, 3, 4 weeks regarding the U.S. Supreme Court, a couple of federal circuit courts, an abortion medication that came out for a generation ago. The Supreme Court steps in. They call a timeout to this. What in the heck is going on? And our go-to guy for a lot of things, Supreme Court Mike O'Neill from the Landmark Legal Foundation, landmarklegal.org. Mike, one of the leading attorneys there. He's back once again to try and sort this all out for us. Mike, it's Paul here. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Paul. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Mike's kind of an interesting case here because this isn't kind of the typical coach versus religious freedom or, some arcane federal law that's being debated again by the Supreme Court over voting rights. Yeah, this happened. And it sounds like, Mike, the high court, I think, thankfully came in like the hall monitor here and said, okay, calm down. So take us back, Mike. What is this case about and how did it start?
Right. So this is a decision. There's a couple issues at play here. This is a decision that came down from a U.S. district court, which is, again, these are the district courts. These are the trial courts in our federal system, and they're all over the country, right? It's not just like one Supreme Court or just a certain court of appeal or just a part of the circuit of the court of appeals. These are district courts. They're located in all our states and in states and territories. In some states, there's a couple of them. In California, I think there's four. I think there's like three or four. Don't quote me on that. In Virginia here, there's two. But there was a district court, which is a trial court, issued a stop, heard the merits, had a trial, and decided this one judge was going to say, okay, we are going to prohibit the sale nationwide. We're going to put a nationwide injunction on the sale of this widely used abortion drug that's used for medical abortions. And so the first issue there is, from a conservative point of view, is, and again, setting aside the abortion issue, is you have one judge in one district court issuing a nationwide injunction, stopping the sale. And that's really concerning, honestly, from, you know, we talk about separation of power in our conservative outlook and our ideology, and we talk about how important it is that power isn't centralized in one body. Well, I think it is dangerous, right? I think we can all agree it is dangerous. If you have one judge making a decision that affects the entire country, hundreds of millions of people. So we've got that issue. So what happened was that decision was immediately appealed to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the court that has the court of appellate jurisdiction over that particular court in Texas. And the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals said, we're going to stay the decision but we're going to put a few other little kind of wrinkles in the decision. So we're going to say it's partially stayed, but we are going to halt. We are going to stop the sale of this drug in certain instances. So it was kind of a half measure that the Fifth Circuit did. Well, then again, that immediately went up. That decision went right up to the appeal via what is known as the shadow docket. And then again, this is as distinct from the merits. You're appealing these injunction decisions, these temporary decisions. So that decision of the Fifth Circuit was immediately appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, who said, okay, we're going to look at this in an abbreviated, accelerated manner. Again, not reach the merits of it, and we're going to determine whether we're going to, as you said, aptly put, we're going to call a timeout here and pause that prohibition, nationwide prohibition, until the Fifth Circuit can hear the decision substantively as a normal appeals process. And the court just last week, Friday night, you know, it was again very accelerated. A lot of lawyers spent a lot of time on this. A lot of briefings went down in a very, very fast manner, which is very, again, highly unusual for the Supreme Court, which, as we all know, is very regimented in how it schedules everything.
And they released the whole thing. And they released the whole thing, Mike, like during happy hour on Friday.
Exactly. It came down very quickly on Friday and Friday evening. And you didn't have an opinion. Again, you had Justice Alito who issued a dissent. He would have agreed with the Fifth Circuit and prohibited the sale. Clarence Thomas said that Clarence Thomas kind of intimated he didn't really say anything, that he would agree with the Fifth Circuit and allow that decision to hold. Seven of the other justices, however, said, okay, we're going to stay the opinion. We're going to call a timeout, as you put it, and we're going to permit the sale of this abortion drug to the extent that it's going now. While the merits case, again, to back you up, while the merits of that district court's decision is heard by the Fifth Circuit on appeal. So, again, we kind of have a pause while the appeal process goes through.
Our Supreme Court go-to guy from the Landmark Legal Foundation, Mike O'Neill, joins us for a few more moments. Hey, Mike, how did we get here, though, with this whole thing? I mean, mifepristone's been used for like a generation. I don't remember it being controversial. It's used all across the world. But I guess it was a conservative organization that introduced something about the FDA. How did we get here?
Right. I think the allegations, and I'm not 100% on this, but I think the allegations were made that they didn't follow the administrative process. And if you actually look at what happened is this is a drug that was accepted and approved in the early 2000s. But what you see is an evolution where that this drug is becoming more and more. When it was originally introduced and originally approved, there were certain restrictions attached to it. You had to go to, I think, three doctor's appointments before you could be prescribed it. You couldn't ship it through the mail. It was available up to 10 weeks or up to 7 weeks, and it wasn't available after 7 weeks. And I think that those numbers have changed. I think now that those restrictions over the past 20 some years have been relaxed. So I think now you can get it up to 10 weeks of a pregnancy as opposed to in the first 7 weeks. You don't have to go to as many doctor's appointments. You can get it via the mail. And again, that mail thing was actually an interesting point now, is because there's a law on the books called the Comstock Act, which is a law that dates back to, my goodness, I think it's the late 1800s, early 1900s, but it's still a valid law that said you could not ship abortion-fashioned medicine drugs via the mail. And so, again, the parties are going to have to contend with this. I think, again, this is a substantive issue that's going to have to be decided substantively by the Fifth Circuit. But again, you've seen these relaxations of these restrictions, particularly the fact that now we have the decision, the Dobbs decision last year. The mail thing is really kind of an interesting take on it, is because you're going to be seeing people maybe shipping it via a black market. You have no idea how this is going to be used, broader implications of its wider usage and whether there are legitimate health concerns with it just being used absent some of the restrictions that have attached to it earlier. So I think that there's some issues that are going to have to be hashed out.
Yeah, and Mike, as you said in your opening comments here, and by the way, Mike O'Neill is the guest from the Landmark Legal Foundation. Mike, I think you're 100% right. I think from a conservative point of view, as much as the right side of the aisle, many of conservatives are, in fact, pro-life. Some are pro-choice. I understand that, more libertarian than anything. I don't like the federal courts used here to try and make a point about largely a social issue. This whole thing kind of rubbed me the wrong way a little bit.
Mm-hmm. See, it's an interesting, because now we're getting into some of the weeds. We talked about the Dobbs decision, and again, everything's, you know, the complications arise now. The Supreme Court last year said that States have, there is no constitutional right to an abortion. Mm-hmm. States can regulate it as they want to via state law. But what happens when those state laws come in conflict with federal interstate commerce laws? You know, if you're shipping medicine into abortion meds into a state that might prohibit it, what law are you breaking? Is that a state law problem? Are there implications of federal law? What's going to happen in the fact when state laws intersect with administrative decisions or FDA decisions or these meds? So we're kind of seeing now what's going to go on with that. And I think it's just going to be hashed out via the legislatures and the courts and via the legal process. And we're going to see how it all kind of comes out in the next few years.
Can you, Mike O'Neill, finally, can you see this eventually ending up again at the high court after numerous lower court levels?
Right. So there was a decision out of, I think, Washington State, a district court that was in direct conflict with the earlier decision that we're talking about, the Texas decision. Again, this is now going through the regular appeals process. There's oral arguments in May at the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Then once the Fifth Circuit issues a decision, that decision, of course, can be appealed to the United States Supreme Court via the regular channels. So, yes, there is a legitimate chance that this can get up there.
Wow.
Again, and so they'll decide this. But again, that will be via the traditional process that we're all very familiar with, not this abbreviated accelerated process. So there will be a more complete airing of all the particular issues.
All right, Mike O'Neill. Mike O'Neill, Landmark Legal Foundation. Check him out online. Mike, thank you as always. We appreciate it. We'll talk down the road, my friend. Thank you.
Talk to you soon, Paul.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right, Mike O'Neill there. So there you go. So this whole thing may end up at the Supreme Court again. And again, Mike explaining to us that the original case on this funneled through a Trump-appointed conservative judge centered on violating some mail statutes and other FDA regulations as well.